Welcome to Black Feathers Podcast, a true and honest conversation about disabilities for all. I am your host, Dr. Crystal Hernandez from the Cherokee Nation.
And I am Shauna Humphreys from Choctaw Nation.
Cherokee Prayer. O Great Spirit, who made all things, look kindly upon the whole human family and take away the arrogance and hatred which separates us from our brothers and sisters.
Today we have with us Mr. Jim E. Warren. He is a member of the Oglala Lakota Sioux Nation. Currently, Jim is the Community Engagement Director at University of South Dakota Center for Disabilities Oyata Circle at Sanford School of Medicine. He consults for various government agencies, organizations, and tribal nations. Jim is contracted with University of Arizona College of Medicine, Sonoran Center, Arizona University Centers for Excellence in Developmental Disability, to create Native disability programs. Jim is a motivational speaker, Native advocate, and has experience including congressional testimonies, cultural diversity, workforce inclusion, film production. He's an actor, stuntman, professional football, youth athletic life skill camps, grant and organizational development, including Higher Education Administration. His production film division produced Seventh Generation, which is an award-winning documentary Jim produced and wrote.
Welcome, Jim.
Oh, well, thanks so much for the invitation, and I like the work that you're doing, and as an advocate and an educator and, geez, a filmmaker, I wear many hats out there, but it's wonderful to be able to address some of the needs that are important to me personally, which is Indian country and advocacy for our sovereignty, the disability world. I feel that the disability culture and the indigenous cultures have many parallels and cross paths a lot in terms of both cultures being kind of forgotten about or underserved or marginalized. And I do the disability work in honor of my father, Jim Sr., who had MS for 37 years and really showed me what true strength was living with a disability, and that's why I do the work in the world of disability, and a lot of my film work addresses Indian country and honor my mother, who's still with me, and she's 83 and still teaching at South Dakota State University Nursing, so it's wonderful to kind of follow in her footsteps. My brother and I both are in the world of academia, and my mom is teaching at the College of Nursing at South Dakota State, and it's been a nice experience to be able to address some of the areas that I feel that are important to me and need more services and supports out there. So I'm very fortunate to be able to work in an area that I believe in and have passion for.
So Jim, I love the fact that you say living with a disability rather than disabled. Can you kind of shed some light on the significance of that statement? And why it's said that way? Because, you know, my child's living with a disability as well. And I talk about, you know, that's thriving. That's all sorts of wonderful stuff. You know, it's not something to go, aw, or ooh, or, you know, a hindrance. We can reframe this if we are, you know, shifting our society belief, if we are layering in the needed things.
Yeah.
It could be great, you know, for them to have a thriving life.
Yes. And many people that have that title living with it or having a disability are doing rather well in their lives, and it's just circumstantial versus, you know, being who they are or they're identified by. And in many cases, the unfortunate reality is many people are identified by their race or by their disability or physical aspect that people see. So in indigenous cultures, in our languages, none of our languages have a word for disability or handicap. It's just a circumstance of the life experience. So obviously we all have different life experience. And how do we live with that life experience? How do we meet those quote unquote challenges? Living with a disability, my dad showed me that yes, using a wheelchair is challenging, but you can still be successful. And that was a great role model for me to have. He kept working until he couldn't, and obviously, with a progressive disease like MS, it did finally make him retire earlier than he would have preferred. But he lasted and was with us till 70 years old. And back in those days, it was a shorter life expectancy for people with MS without the current treatments and medications and new discoveries they have today in the field of medicine. So again, he had those challenges, but he was still the center of our family. He was kind of the rock of the family, if you will. You know, everyone came around to see Papa Jim, if you will. So living with a disability, I think you, I'm glad you like that because it's just a circumstance. If we don't have a term for disability or handicap, then we just, you know, we don't have that terminology that sometimes can be negative.
Absolutely. And so I know when you were telling us a little bit about yourself, you were mentioning some of the projects and affiliations that you have, which are vast and beautiful, to be honest. Like I was kind of in awe looking at some of your bio. It's just like, wow, when I grow up, I would like to be Jim, you know? And so just some of the things you're doing is outstanding. And the honor that you're providing to your family, to your loved ones, and to the people is just so magnificent. And so you've launched several programs across the states to address intersectionality of culture and disability. Mm-hmm. What do you believe is the most frequently held misconception that you have had to address?
Well, again, it's, you know, the Indian issue is always a misconception in America, as well as disability issues. We're just finally getting out of the old terminology of handicap when that came from the UK years ago, hundreds of years ago, with hand in cap for people that were begging in the streets. So obviously handicap is not a positive reference, and we try to be a people first identifier. You know, we don't want to be identified by who we are in terms of our race or our disability or circumstance. So those are some of the aspects that I like addressing, and through some of the programs that I work with is addressing Indian country and disability issues both. So it's wonderful to have the Oyate circle, and Oyate is the Lakota language, meaning the people. So we're serving the people of South Dakota, which is the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota. And those three bands of tribal nations make up the Ocheti Shakoi, which is Lakota for the council fires, the seven council fires. And it's a big nation, and America calls us the Great Sioux Empire or the Sioux Nation. But it's actually a variety of different tribal bands within the nation. And I happen to be the Oglala Lakota of the Ocheti Shakoi. So many people know the Oglala Lakota because of Red Cloud and Crazy Horse were people in my band, and Sitting Bull was Hunkpapa, so he was a different band, but also Lakota. So it's kind of a different, unique perspective when people go, oh, are you Indian, or do you speak Indian? I always respond, yeah. Oh, do you speak European, or do you speak Asian, you know? So again, it's
yes,
you know, just another misconception. Nobody's there, you know, trying to be rude, or maybe some of them are, unfortunately, still today, but the majority are just not really educated. It's almost a ignorance by design, if you will, in terms of Indian country and disability cultures. Because with my dad, he was a wonderful example to have as a young man, because he contracted MS when I was in high school. So I saw him when he was able to walk and do those things, and then witnessed some of the initial, you know, circumstances that he would be facing as MS progressed. But when he was using his scooter, the old Amigo wheelchair scooters back in the day, you know, people would, mostly children, you know, wonderful kids, you know, come up and go, hey, what's wrong? Why are you using that? And then who's the first person to teach them to fear disability? Is their parents going, shh, don't talk to that person, leave them alone. You know, but my father would always go and make an effort to say, oh, no, it's okay. My legs just don't work like yours, so I use this to get around, you know. Isn't that nice? I can have this so I can go to the store. So he made it an educational and a comfortable situation with that young child, And I'm hoping those parents realize that, oh, okay, I don't have to teach my child to fear a wheelchair or whatever assistive technology device or difference in appearance or whatever our disability may be. We all have unique circumstances, and that's the human experience that I wish more of us were more in tune with versus just seeing the differences in a negative connotation often.
Absolutely. So you mentioned Oyate Circle. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
Yeah.
You know, how it started, kind of the intention behind it? Because I do notice that you you are recognized by the Association of University Centers on Disabilities with an award for that.
And that was wonderful recognition.
Good work and fantastic.
Yeah, 5-6 years ago now, I was kind of pulled back into academia, which I'm so glad I was. I was actually showing my film, my first documentary, Seventh Generation, which is still on Amazon Prime, so it's a shameless plug there. But when showing my film, Wendy Parent Johnson, who was the director of the USED in South Dakota, which is where the Oyate Circle is now, you know, I said I was retired from academia and concentrating on film, but she goes, do you want a job? Do you want to come back? And I go, no, but she convinced me. And I wrote a few grants, and fortunately, a few of them got funded, and we have a variety of grants and contracts from the state agency and Developmental Disability Council and the South Dakota Disability Law Legal Group representation, as well as HHS and ACL, Health and Human Services, excuse me, and the Association of Community Living Grants that support disability services. It's been a wonderful experience creating more Native programs because I worked for 22 years at San Diego State University. Right after I earned my master's in 93, I ended up staying there. And I was able at San Diego State University to create the Circle for American Indian Rehabilitation and Education Care. And that was a wonderful program that housed several certificate programs where I had a variety of tribal members that specialized in vocational rehabilitation. And I love vocational rehabilitation because those are empowerment programs. And my programs are all about empowerment, empowering people with disabilities, empowering our tribal members living in our various reservation communities. Those are the core of the work that I do. And that's why Oyate Circle is named with utilizing our Lakota language so that the people that we serve can have that comfort knowing that, oh, these people understand us coming from a university program that historically may not have approached folks from an indigenized or Indianized approach to disability services. Again, not having a term for disability, how do we explain the field of disability when there's no term in our languages for that, particularly for our traditional folks that still English is second language in many cases back home on Pine Ridge, South Dakota, where I'm from. And so it's wonderful to have Oyate Circle at the University of South Dakota Center for Disabilities. And our new director there, Eric Kurtz, has been wonderful in helping us expand to a national level where we're working with Head Start, American Indian Office in DC. We just completed a year-long training program with Region 8 Maternal Child Health Programs so that we can address our needs for our young ones out there and young families. Many of those disabilities can be, you know, at least maybe even stopped in many cases, but at least giving those folks opportunities to know how to live with your disability and not let that disability define who you are.
Fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, before I met you, you know, which was not that long ago on the telephone, right? I had watched Seventh Generation. Oh. And it was, yeah. And I saw a lot of the interviews that you had done with different people talking about, you know, why, you know, what it represented and why. And it was interesting because, you know, again, before I knew you, before I even, you know, knew the video or any of those things, I kind of leaned in on the Seventh Generation quote and the principle behind it and the purpose of it. So I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about what that is for you and kind of how it evolved into this movement.
Yeah, the seventh generation philosophy is something that I was raised with since I was young from a Lakota lens. I was very fortunate, even though I was quote unquote urban Indian or pavement Indian, you know, living off the res. My mom made sure that my brother and I knew growing up in Tempe, Arizona, just outside of Phoenix, we knew who we are as Lakota. And our lands, our traditional lands, were in the Dakotas. And, you know, so we were off our reservation, if you will, but we still had that training from a strong Lakota woman, indigenous woman. And again, she's demonstrating that with her still working at 83 years old. But having that guidance and training of the seventh generation and the seven values, and seven is a very big aspect, the seven directions of our circle when you think dimensionally versus just flat, multi dimensions of the circle, there are seven directions. And the ultimate direction is within that seventh direction at the center of our circle is humility. So having that training, and as the seventh generation philosophy tells us, as we as individuals, all of us as two-leggeds, it can be our non-Indian brothers and sisters as well, to see the world this way, is we must represent seven generations behind and seven generations ahead. And that's a great responsibility for all of us to ensure that we're doing what we can while we're here in this world, leaving footprints in this world, or wheel prints, or whatever prints you happen to leave. But what kind of prints are you leaving for those future generations, as well as are those prints representing your past generations in a good way? So that's, I think, a wonderful way of seeing the world, and gives us all that responsibility of, let's make sure we're representing generations that I never met. You know, if we're fortunate, we know our great-great-grandparents, but this is before them, as well as the generations we will never see. And will there be stories of us in terms of, oh, Grandpa Jimmy, great-great-grandpa Jimmy did this and that, you know, and at least those stories will resonate with future generations, not only in my family, but for all the people, in terms of what are we doing to make it better for the next seven generations. So that's kind of in a nutshell, the seventh generation philosophy, if you will.
I loved hearing that, honestly, and I think I've heard a version of that in one of the videos, and it's just, you know, that's the way that I've always lived my life. You know, we're here for such a short period physically, and we have to do what we can to make the world heal and healthy and enjoyable, and think about, you know, the things that you'll never touch, like the great-great-grandchildren you'll never touch. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to honor everything we're given in our past and those that walked before us, and leave something better, make it better. And I think that's so incredible that you have that philosophy and you share it. You know, I know that you do some youth work. I've read a lot about the work that you do with the future, mm-hmm. right? And it's just an incredible thing, incredible heart that you take forward. And I just want to thank you for the work that you do.
Oh, Palamia, thank you so much.
I did hear, and I think it was one of your interviews about the seventh generation movie. You talked about an Indian heart. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, having that heart, and when you do an aerial photograph, and my film team did a wonderful job with the graphics to see the aerial photograph of the Black Hills. Paha Sapa is Black Hills in our language. But the Black Hills of South Dakota, when you look at it from satellite pictures, has the shape of a human heart. And John and the team were able to, you know, kind of put in those graphics of a human heart right over the photograph of the Black Hills, the aerial photograph. So it's wonderful to show that that is the heart of the Mother Earth, if you will, in our case. For North America, it's right there in terms of almost the center of Mother Earth, Unchimaka, if you will, from our language, is addressing how the heart is part of all of us in terms of the heartbeat of Mother Earth. When we do our drumming, our songs, the drum is kind of a representation of that heartbeat of Mother Earth, and we sing the songs and drum in honor of not only Mother Earth, but of the Great Spirit, so that we are honoring the Great Spirit as well as Mother Earth in which we live on. So that's part of the heart philosophy and how we're connected to Unchimaka as well as the Creator.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that. So, like I mentioned, you do so many things. Your hand is just in all things. You know, you're changing policy, you're informing hearts and minds, and you're shifting, persuading, and educating, and growing. At the totality of your work, what do you think, if you had a bunch of youth in front of you right now, what would that look like? What would you tell them in terms of the responsibility and the duty, but the opportunity that they have? What would you say to them?
And that's a great term, opportunity, because I would say that this generation has a great opportunity to impact multi-generations. Right now, when you think of our politics and some of our policies that are not addressing Mother Earth, she's screaming right now and trying to warn us, and we are ignoring her. So I don't know if it's going to take another pandemic or what kind of natural disaster. So again, it's just illogical to think about that when we're not honoring Mother Earth in terms of providing that life for us. And all of these disasters, particularly the pandemic, really showed the value of elders and people with disabilities for many people. Some of that unbalance, and it became political, is how did a pandemic, a public health challenge, become a political pawn? And that was an interesting thing to observe, very sad to observe, because many reservations were not vaccinated very well. And therefore, we lost a whole generation of elders as a result of the pandemic. So how much of that traditional knowledge and those traditional educators that left us too early will impact the next generation in terms of their traditional knowledge? So those are some of the challenges I see that are impacting us collectively, not only in Indian country or disability, but all of us throughout the world.
So you mentioned policy perspective, and I know that you spend a significant time focusing your energy in that area. What do you need from a policy perspective to advance access to information and culturally rooted services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families in Indian country?
Well, that's a perfect timing, because I'm getting on a red eye tonight to be in DC and be on Capitol Hill on Wednesday to advocate for youth disability programs and support. So I'll be letting our representatives know, Senate and House representatives, know the needs of Indian country youth. The unfortunate reality back home on Pine Ridge is nearly every day we have a youth attempt suicide. Fortunately, they're not successful, most of them, but too many of them are successful. We have the highest rate of youth suicide in the nation. So that's something that is obviously impacting future generations, because so many of our young people are taking their lives and making that decision, that permanent decision, that could be an issue that is temporary in terms of the challenges, getting them to that point of suicide. So those are some of the issues policy-wise that I'll be sharing with our leaders, and hopefully they can get it together. What's good about disability and youth issues is that all of us as human beings, regardless of party, have some sort of connection to that personally. So our young ones, I'm a grandparent now, so I see the world even more differently than when I became a parent. So my son completely changed me in my young years. Now as a grandparent, I'm even more, future generation, if you will, focused, because I want a better world, not only for my son, but for my grandkids and the next generation. So these policies and the young people today, if they participate, can really make a change. And it seems like many of our young ones are becoming more independent in mind and are not just voting party line, but voting humanistically and what's good for us and future generations. So I think Black Elk was right that it would take seven generations to heal our sacred hoop, our circle, after Wounded Knee in 1890. That's the youth of today after the Wounded Knee Massacre. So from a personal standpoint, this is a very important generation after Wounded Knee, and some significant change in our people, the Lakota, after we no longer fought the U.S. troops after that massacre. So now we're in that seventh generation. I see many of our young ones doing well and succeeding with and without disability. Still many challenges, as I said, with the suicide rates and the poverty and those things that are still facing us today. But that is this current generation's challenge. And it's our responsibility to let those young ones have an opportunity to make those changes, to succeed, because that will be obviously the next generation's benefit.
What do you see as the biggest barrier for our Indigenous disability communities?
Misunderstanding from a congressional standpoint, I'll be talking with senators from states that have Indian country, that have reservations or sovereign lands in their states. But 15 states don't have tribes anymore. They were eliminated. So 15 states, so 30 senators don't have to address Indian issues. So that puts us, you know, at a big challenge in terms of Indian country trying to get legislative change and support. Fortunately, now with this current administration, Deb Haaland is the first ever American Indian that has been put into the Department of Interior. She's the Secretary of the Department of Interior, which historically went to white men. So now Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA, actually stands for Bureau of Indian Affairs, when historically we just called BIA Bossing Indians Around. So that was the federal agency that we were dealing with leadership that really didn't have us in their heart in terms of what was good for Indian country and our sovereignty. Now we have someone at least from Indian country who has a good heart, and she's doing her best working with over 500 tribal nations and addressing their needs and issues, which is hard to do. But with a lot of the new federal acts and the infrastructure, Indian country is part of that. So we're seeing an increases of those job opportunities and job creation for Indian country as a result of this administration having a Native voice at the table. So that's, again, just it took generations, obviously, but again, here we are in the seventh generation, and it took that long to have an American Indian leading the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Interior. So I'm hoping to meet and stop by that office as well and drop off some information regarding disabilities and Indian youth, as well as just the needs Indian country has, kind of in the whole perspective, the full circle, because our youth are challenged because of some of the bigger issues policy-wise, where we need to make sure that our sovereignty is protected, that we continue our government-to-government relationships, so that some of these federal acts in the past that did not include Indian country won't do that damage that has historically happened. So I'm looking forward to these new programs, and hopefully Indian country is able to utilize some of the new resources available as a result of some of these new federal acts that included and had an Indian voice and fingerprints within that federal language.
So definitely history making, right?
Oh, yeah.
As you mentioned, you know, definitely history making. I think the opportunity and just the culmination of all things is just at this moment where it's just historic and never happened. And so I think, yeah, absolutely. We have the right time, the right people getting in the right seats to make some real big moves. And it's it definitely is overdue, long overdue. I think we talked about that on the first call we were on, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, I was just going to mention my wife has heard the call as well, because she was going home a lot to her reservation in Northern California, Hoopa Reservation, to help her dad and her sister because her sister was living at home with her dad to help him because he has a significant disability as a stroke survivor, but she ended up having a stroke. So now both of them are in need of assistance. So my wife, Jill, was going home to help her dad, and the community noticed her being there more often because she still has her home there. And so we kind of a dual home reality, which is even more so now because the people asked her to run for tribal council, and she got elected last year to her tribal council. So now she's a tribal leader, and she's already been encouraged to run for tribal chair. So she's feeling that call of this generation as well. And I think in the world of disability, again, it's not a political party because all of us as human beings are impacted by disability in some way. And that's how we need to, you know, continually approach it, as this is not a political issue, this is a human issue. And it is a life experience that we will all experience if we're fortunate to live to be elders and have more challenges in our older years. So again, those were just some of the philosophies that I want to share with our policymakers on the Hill this coming Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jim, for joining us. And I love the native humor. I felt right at home. So, hey, yeah, exactly.
Hey, yeah, right. Well, I appreciate what you're doing because you're bringing a voice to Indian country through this podcast and to disability. So you're doing that work as well and identifying both cultures and some of the challenges out there and misconceptions. And so you're educating the public so they can see things a little differently as well. So keep up the good work. I appreciate it. Palamia, watch today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You know, a lot of my friends in my age bracket, the podcasting is their jam, is their thing. And so, you know, it just naturally for me came about, you know, to come up with something different, something that really speaks to the heart. And for us, it's like, you know, we bring these individuals on who share their stories because, as you mentioned, it's a human dynamic that touches everybody in different ways, different degrees, of course, but it definitely touches everyone. And we should all do the work, care about the work, and seize the opportunity that's really laid at our feet at this moment. You know, it's been a long, hard fight, a lot of tears and a lot of deaths and a lot of blood and a lot of everything in between. And I think it's a fantastic opportunity, you know, for the ears to actually hear us and for the changes to actually occur. You know, it's been slow, but it's definitely coming forward. And, you know, I thank you so much for sharing your story. But more importantly than that, I thank you for the work that you do and you continue to do, you know, and seeing the grander vision of what is to come and what could come is something that I hope every generation can see, because it's not one person or one thing. It takes every single one of us, you know, beating that drum together and coming together in a way that is going to change our world.
Yes, and thank you. And Shauna, mentioning those future generations, that's kind of, as you know, mentioning the Indian humor and some of the res reality that we have. You know, mom would, you know, I was an advocate. My brother and I were advocates before we even knew what the word meant, you know. So when we'd take dad out pre-ADA, pre-Americans with Disabilities Act, we would have to sometimes go through the kitchen or whatever so he could eat at that particular restaurant. So I was sent to the back kitchen door and my brother to the front, and my brother would identify the manager and say, my brother's in the back making sure my dad can eat here with his wheelchair. Because in those days, you know, the accommodation and access was not federally mandated, and it was up to the stores and the restaurants to choose if they wanted ramps or access if they had stairs. So that was quite an experience for a 12-year-old to be back there, you know, hey, move this, move that, my dad needs it, you know. And I just did it because mom said, go do it, first of all. But, you know, I wanted dad to be able to eat with us and just go to the restaurant. And that was just our reality. So again, people call that resilience, and people with disabilities and folks from Indian country almost have to be resilient every day just to face some of those challenges and misconceptions out there. So keep up the good work.
Absolutely. So Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope that you have a fantastic trip and that you change a million hearts and minds. in everything that you're about to do. The significance of honoring tradition and carrying that over to our youth is incredibly important and directly tied to our cultural survival. For far too long, our practices, customs, beliefs, and existence has had such an opposition, but we continue to thrive and survive. We are resilient, dignified, and warriors. It is our future generations that will have such incredible opportunities to sit in seats never allowed or dreamed of before, to walk in spaces once prohibited, and speak their truths and finally be heard, and let those truths change the fabric of our nation forever forward.
Sun Tracks by Ohtani, Choctaw. The track of the sun across the sky leaves its shining message, illuminating, strengthening, warming us who are here, showing us we are not alone. We are yet alive, and this fire, our fire, shall not die.
When we show our respect for other living things, they respond with respect for us. Arapaho. We must speak up collectively and individually. We must seek change and advocate for the issues that matter to us and be visible. Dr. Hernandez. Join us for Developmental Disabilities Month with our guests from National Association of Councils on Developmental Disabilities. You won't want to miss this episode.
We want to thank our listeners and hope that you'll continue to listen, subscribe, share, and provide ratings and reviews. Also, follow us on Twitter at Black Feathers Pod. You can get resources and information about this podcast at blackfeathers.org.
Thank you to Cherokee National Treasure, Tommy Wildcat, for the use of your flute music on this podcast.
I want to thank Lucas Frazier and the boys for letting us use their drumming music. Please subscribe to Black Feathers Podcast. You can find us wherever podcasts are found.
We would love to hear from you. Tell us about your journey with disability and guide us on future episodes of Black Feathers by visiting blackfeathers.org and answering a few short questions at the bottom of that page.